This is Jose Merino, Editor-in-Chief of the Neurology Family of Journals. The Neurology Podcast provides practical information to neurologists and other clinicians to help them provide better care for their patients. Thanks for listening and have a great week.
Hi, this is Hallie Alexander with the Neurology Podcast. Today I'm speaking with Mark Kieser about the risks of sudden death in cardiac arrhythmia with lamotrigine. Mark is an epileptologist and epidemiologist from the University of Montreal and senior author on the recent paper titled Sudden Death and Cardiac Arrhythmia with Lamotrigine, a Rapid Systematic Review, which is now available in Neurology. Mark, welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining us to talk about this work.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
So first off, can you share a little bit of the background about where these concerns about lamotrigine are coming from and why it's generated a little bit of controversy in the field?
It started in 2020 when the FDA, it was actually quite a surprise to us in the epilepsy community, the FDA put out an advisory. They modified their monograph for lamotrigine, stating that clinicians should avoid lamotrigine in certain patient groups. We were a bit surprised by this. We started trying to query why this was done. We learned that it was exclusively based on in vitro data, that it suggested that lamotrigine was a class 1B antiarrhythmic.
And so if I understand it correctly, then a joint task force was created between the ILAE, or International League Against Epilepsy, and the American Epilepsy Society to then try to kind of help translate this data for clinicians to understand how to interpret these warnings and how to incorporate this information into their clinical practice. So the paper that we're discussing today is one of the outcomes of this task force, really looking at what is the clinical evidence then regarding the risks of sudden death, SUDEP and cardiac arrhythmias, conduction disorders, etc., among people treated with lamotrigine. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. I was fortunate to be invited to be part of that joint ILAE and AES task force. And that was absolutely one of the things that we highlighted, that the FDA had made this change based on in vitro data, and that looking at the clinical data, we felt, was just as important. And that led directly to this work, to this paper that we've now had published in Neurology. The idea was to look at the clinical data that exists, clinical data that's been accumulated over more than 30 years of experience with lamotrigine.
Great. Well, thank you for doing that work. So what did your group find in this review of the clinical literature?
So we screened about 1,500 references. In the end, we ended up identifying 26 studies that had looked at the risk of sudden death, the risk of SUDEP, and the risk of ECG changes, electrocardiogram changes, associated with exposure to lamotrigine. These are 26 studies, about 16 of them that looked specifically at sudden death and SUDEP, 10 of them that looked at ECG changes. And then we've concluded that there was insufficient clinical data to suggest that lamotrigine poses an important risk to humans. We also had to admit, however, and it was important for us to admit, that there was insufficient evidence to conclude not only that it's dangerous, but also to conclude that it is safe.
So how do we translate this into our clinical practice then? What do we need to be doing differently with lamotrigine in terms of our prescribing practices now?
I think it is very important to first highlight the importance of lamotrigine, its utility. We've been using lamotrigine for 30 years. Lamotrigine has been, I can tell you anecdotally, amongst myself and many of my colleagues, lamotrigine is one of our preferred anti-seizure medications in many different groups of people with epilepsy, that there have been repeated studies that have proven that not only is lamotrigine generally effective, that it's perhaps one of, if not the most effective medication for many different types of epilepsy, including focal epilepsy. We have the SANAD trial, we have the SANAD 2 trial confirming its efficacy, and in general, its tolerability. Lamotrigine is one of our preferred medications in women of childbearing potential. It is one of our preferred medications amongst older adults, amongst vulnerable individuals. In fact, I think that was one of our great motivations for the joint task force for us when we were working on this paper was, in general, we think this is a great medication. But the in vitro data is important. It's important for us to consider. So we think it should be used. We shouldn't shy away from using it in general. It is reasonable for us to at least be prudent. The task force had concluded that in certain patient groups that are at risk for sudden death, for cardiac arrhythmia, it is prudent to perform an electrocardiogram. We specifically stated that in anyone over age 60 should have an ECG at the time of initiation of the medication. Anyone who is under 60 but known for cardiac disease, whether arrhythmia or structural cardiac disease, should also have an ECG at the time of initiation, and that it's appropriate to then repeat that ECG once you've hit your target lamotrigine dose.
I couldn't agree more that lamotrigine is such an essential medication for us in our practices, and I also use it as one of my go-to medications for multiple different populations. So I'm glad to see the results of the study were not too detrimental as to who we can prescribe lamotrigine to. So just to quickly summarize, basically now when we're prescribing it, we just want to make sure to get an EKG in anyone over 60. And if anyone is less than 60, then we would only get an EKG if there's known cardiac disease. But how do we counsel our patients now about some of these increased risks that's out there? Before this data came out, most of the counseling around lamotrigine was about the risk of rash, but should we also be including this possible risk of cardiac arrhythmia, sudden death, SUDEP, etc., when we're starting patients on lamotrigine?
We believe that the findings of our study were important, even though, as I've already stated, we could not conclude that lamotrigine was either safe or dangerous in terms of this concern that was brought up by the FDA. We feel that that conclusion is important because what it does leave us with is what we are certain about with lamotrigine, which is that its efficacy and its general tolerability and how it is a preferred medication in many different groups, something that has been confirmed by different practice guidelines over many years. So I would reemphasize with patients, I explain to them the general benefits and risks associated with lamotrigine, those that we are confident in. We are confident that lamotrigine does pose a certain risk in terms of rash and Steven Johnson's, but we're also relatively confident in knowing what we can do to mitigate that risk. And in general, in practice, it's been my experience that it's actually it's a very rare phenomenon because we generally know what to do to prevent it. That those are the things that we know about lamotrigine. What we don't know is that perhaps there is an additional risk for cardiac arrhythmia and sudden death. Perhaps. But we are certainly not convinced of this based on clinical data, that we will take certain precautions, including doing ECGs. But otherwise, we are generally quite comfortable continuing to use the medication.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. That's a helpful way to kind of lay it out for the patients. Now, do we need to do anything with our patients? For a lot of us, it's many, many patients that we have that are already on lamotrigine. You know, do we need to be contacting them or changing anything in their management if they've been on it for years?
I think that the cardiac risk associated with lamotrigine is not clear, that it is prudent to request an ECG and maybe even a cardiology consult in patients that you are seeing during their regularly scheduled follow-up. But because the risk is not clear, in fact, there are a lot of questions about how important this risk is, that at least in my own practice, I have not started trying to contact all my patients who are already treated with lamotrigine, some of whom have been treated with lamotrigine for years, if not decades. That I have not started doing so because the risk is not clear, and also doing so, at least in my practice, it would be difficult. It would be not necessarily practical.
I think that makes a lot of sense. That's really not practical to be calling everyone in who's on lamotrigine. But, you know, when we do see them for their follow-up, bringing it up and appropriately testing the patients who need to be tested.
If I may, then the irony becomes also that there's a question of maybe it's not just if there is a problem with lamotrigine, perhaps it's not just lamotrigine, perhaps it's an entire class effect. It's something that's affecting all sodium channel blocker anti-seizure medications. In fact, of all the sodium channel blocking anti-seizure medications, Lamotrigine has not traditionally been the one that has worried us. We've thought more about arrhythmias has been more something that has been mentioned with others, such as lacosamide, with carbamazepine, phenytoin. Whether we're calling in everyone to urgently perform ECGs, cardiology consults, if we start doing that for lamotrigine, it creates questions about all these other medications as well. In fact, perhaps even more burning questions about these others.
Yeah, that's an excellent point as well. Again, I've been speaking with Mark Kieser about his recent publication in Neurology titled Sudden Death in Cardiac Arrhythmia with Lamotrigine, a Rapid Systematic Review. You can find the full article in this week's issue of Neurology. And there is also an advisory statement that was put together by the same task force, which is available in a helpful Q&A format and provides some additional prescribing guidance for providers if we did not answer your questions here today. You can find this advisory statement on aesnet.org or in the February 28th, 2021 issue of Epilepsy Currents, or you could listen to the summary in the May 15th Neurology Minute Daily Briefing. Mark, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
This has been another episode of the Neurology Podcast, your best source of practical, relevant, and timely information for neurologists, clinicians, and patients. The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.